The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
The Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part this week by DDP Yoga. Now, you already know what WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga has done to help thousands of people all over the world. But now, hey man, Dallas has done it again. DDP Yoga has added DDPY Rebuild. It's a new variation of the traditional DDPY program catered towards those ages 55 plus and those with physical limitations and extremely limited mobility. The DDPY Rebuild workouts will take you from the bed to the chair and eventually standing upright with the support of a chair. The DDPY Rebuild program is a perfect holiday gift for your parents, grandparents, or even your great-grandparents. So head over to ddpyoga.com/rebuild and learn more and pre-order the DDPY Rebuild program. Also, DDPY's massive holiday sale has been extended. You can still get 30% off all DVDs, app membership, and apparel on ddpyoga.com. You heard it right, 30% off. They've never had a sale like this before. There's no better time to take advantage of the DDPY program. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It provides a kick-ass cardio workout with minimal joint impact. It'll have you on your way to not only changing your life, but owning your life.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. My guest on today's podcast is country music superstar Luke Bryan. Luke Bryan has just pulled through Los Angeles, California, had some time-sensitive stuff going with the promotion of his latest album, What Makes You Country. I got the call, so I went down to West Hollywood this morning in that big, badass, four-wheel drive, jacked-up Jeep from Bushwhacker that I'm driving around. I made my way over to the hotel he's staying at, and we opened up a couple of microphones, started rolling sound, and started shooting the breeze. Hey, man, as the conversation starts, I was just putting my phone on silence, and Luke looked at my phone, and he saw a picture of my black lab, Callie, so we immediately start talking about dogs. So as you listen to this conversation, we start off talking about dogs because we're talking about Callie, my black lab, and he goes on to tell me about his chocolate lab named Chalk. So that's how the conversation starts, and then we get into some stories and talk about the album a little bit and just life on the road, man. It's good talking with this guy. I've been listening to his music for a long time. Hell, I remember a couple years ago when he had Country Girl Shake It for Me, and my wife came home from Zumba, and she goes, "We did a Zumba song to Luke Bryan today." I couldn't believe it. Well, I could believe it once I heard the song because that had that upbeat beat to it. So anyway, for those of you guys that were looking forward to Elias from the WWE, WWE Superstar, he will be on next Tuesday's show. And Elias, I apologize for delaying it, but because Luke is trying to get all the push and all the publicity out this week for the sale of his album, I jumped in line. I'll make it up for you and I'll buy you a beer. I had a good time going down there. Hell, man, I tell you what, I was driving that badass Jeep, and that thing is lifted off the ground. It's got those 37-inch tires. And I tell you what, I'm really, really growing fond of that vehicle. I'm going to have to give it up here pretty quick. They're going to pick it up in a couple of days. But, man, that is a fun beast to ride around in a Bushwhacker. Fender Flares built that Jeep, and I was at a stoplight somewhere in West Hollywood. I was about 2 miles from Luke's hotel. And I was sitting there, man, and I had my ear pods in, and I was rocking out. I was listening to the album because I was getting in a frame of mind to talk to Luke. Hell, I know he's been out there doing all the promotional stuff, and I wanted to have a conversation with him that was going to be a little bit different than everybody else was having with him. So I was thinking about what we were going to talk about. And I see this convertible Mustang pull up on my passenger side, and the guy kind of gives me the signal. And so I'm thinking, okay, he just wants to tell me that's a badass Jeep you're driving. So I pull out my right ear pod, and I hit the button, the electric windows on that Jeep, and I rolled the window down, and it's four guys in a convertible Mustang, and the guy with broken English asked me the directions to Beverly Hills. There I am in a big, badass, jacked-up, four-wheel drive Jeep going to interview Luke Bryan, and the dudes from Europe are asking me how to get to Beverly Hills. Hell, I've been hitting head with so many steel chairs. All I know is front, back, right, and left. I don't know how to get to Beverly Hills when I'm in Beverly Hills. I listen to Siri on my damn telephone my iPhone anytime I need directions. And I'm listening to Siri trying to guide me into Luke Bryan while I'm listening to his album. So I looked at the dudes and said, man, I'm from Texas. I don't know where Beverly Hills is at. So anyway, they didn't recognize the global icon and national treasure that they were talking to. I rolled up the window and proceeded to the hotel and opened up a can of Audio Whoop Ass, talking about hunting, fishing, outdoors, music, singing, writing songs and stuff like that with Luke Bryan. And Luke, it was nice meeting you. Gave me an hour of your time. Enjoyed talking to you. There's not a whole lot of cats I'd drive across town to talk to. You're one of them. I love the album. I was listening to Tailgates and Tan Lines on my trip from Reno. Y'all will hear that story. I dig that album. That's the Country Girl album. Drunk on You, all that stuff. Good record. So it was nice meeting you. Good luck out there on the road as you promote this record and get back out there and start playing them concerts. For all of you WWE fans who are looking forward to hearing Elias, who will be on next Tuesday's show, I owe Elias a protein shake or a beer or whatever he drinks for pushing him, but we're trying to accommodate the Luke Bryan people and get the word on the street about this badass album. I dig it the most. If you're a Luke Bryan fan, I believe you'll dig it. If you have never listened to Luke, I suggest you listen to him. I dig this album. I've been a fan for a long time anyway, so it is what it is. But before we get to my conversation with Luke Bryan, I got to tell you guys about History's new scripted drama series, Nightfall. Set in a medieval France, tangled in politics and conflict, one headstrong and courageous Templar knight, Landry, will lead his order of warrior monks on a life-or-death mission to find the lost Holy Grail. Focusing on themes such as belief, sacrifice, politics, love, power, and revenge, Nightfall goes deep into the clandestine world of this legendary brotherhood of warrior monks to find out who these knights were, how they lived, and what they died believing. Explore the mysterious world of the Knights Templar on History's new hit drama series, Nightfall, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central, only on History. Control the Grail, control the world. And one last thing, do not forget to set your DVR Tuesday, 10, 9 Central, Broken Skull Challenge. The women come back for second place, gets a second chance. This is a badass episode that will melt your television off the wall. I'm coming right back with Luke Bryan.
Hey, my name is James Petragallo.
I'm Jimmy Withman.
Please join us every single Tuesday for Crime in Sports.
So fun.
You like sports?
You don't have to.
Let's just set up a context and find out what an idiot did wrong.
I
what
like
do you say?
It. I'm in.
We're going to do that each and every week. We take an athlete, we break him down, we make fun of everything he's ever done.
Yeah. But in order to do that, we have to build up and tell you all about their career and get you to what, James?
To grace.
That's
and then
right.
Watch them fall from grace.
Who
as they inevitably
like
do. Join us. Big criminals, small criminals, sports you've never heard of, doesn't matter. It's the crime, it's the comedy, it's such a good time. Join us every Tuesday for Crime in Sports.
You can join us every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on all Apple products.
Find us every Tuesday and laugh at people.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Sitting here with Luke Bryan. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to show Luke Bryan a picture of my dog.
Oh, goodness.
You just got a new chocolate lab about in July.
I got a chocolate lab that he just crossed over into manhood this morning.
How does a chocolate lab puppy cross
at
over into manhood?
At 9 months old, he is a man.
How you do that?
So I sent him off to get, I met a guy that, he's a lawyer friend of ours that we met. He meets us and he starts talking about how much he loves his, that thing's nice. He starts talking about, he's got a female lab that he trains and puts her in all these trials, and she's won a lot of trials. And I start talking about my new chocolate lab, and he goes, man, if you want me to work with him, and I liked it because he's not this big mass breeder, got 30 dogs, they're going to be in the kennel. So I sent Chalk to go live with him, and Chalk has been sleeping in a crate by their bed, and he's got him tuned up. Well, about couple months ago, the guy training him goes, hey man, my female's about to come in heat. You mind if we go on and do a litter with Chalk? I said, hey, if you can get a 9 month old to figure it out, go ahead. So he called me this morning and said, Chalk figured it out. You can't.
He
won't be worth a damn when he gets back. He'll be rolling up in a Rolls Royce with a 3-piece suit on when he gets back.
God dang, Luke, it's good to talk to you. I got a question to ask you. Well, first of all, let me tell you about my little story coming over here. Man, I've been living out here in California about 13 years, and I'm kind of a homebody. I don't get out too much. So, man, if you said to me, hey, Steve, man, you want to drive across town to West Hollywood to go talk to someone in rush hour traffic, 9 times out of 10, my answer is going to be hell no. And he said it's going to be Luke Bryan. I said, well, oh, hell yeah. So I loaded up at a four-door Jeep, big-ass lift kit, 37s, had your album cranked up on my iPods. These things sound good. Yeah. And What Makes You Country would just blaze my damn eardrums. I dig that song. My question to you is, as I was talking to the people here from the record company, the timing on this album. Brother, it's deer season. I know you like to hunt. Have you been on the road? Or is it a promotional swing right now? Are you going to be able to get out in the woods?
Listen, I have pretty much put the nail in the coffin of my deer hunting season this year. It's been, so I took on Idol. And when I took on American Idol, I knew that my affiliation with all my buck commander guys, they're in Kansas right now hunting. I just talked to them and they're having a blast. But, you know, I told my wife and I said, hey, I'm going to take on Idol, and I got my album coming out. And so I'm touring. I got an album coming out, American Idol. And the biggest thing, you know, with all of our filming for our hunting show, Buck Commander, we got to travel. And in years past, I would go down to Texas, hunt for 4 days. I'd go to Kansas, hunt for 4 days. So I told my wife, I said, I'm not going to do that this year. But I have been able to get in the woods with my boys. I took Tate, my 9-year-old. When I'm home, I'll get them out of school a little early. When the time changes, my farm that we do most of our deer hunting at is about an hour south of town, or about 45 minutes from our house. So I'll go get the boys about, 1:30, and man, when they hear their name on the intercom, they know that daddy's come in and they're going hunting. So man, they come walking down the hall. They're fired up. So I took Tate, and he killed a doe last week. And then I took Bo down. I got a place down for Thanksgiving. We went down to, I got a little quail hunting farm that we do some quail hunting on, that's right on the Flint River. And we went down there, and one of our neighbors called me down there, and he said, hey, if you want to bring your 9-year-old over, I got a big 11 showing up pretty regularly. And I was like, well, how big is it? He goes, he's a mid-50s. And I said, well, we'll be there. Okay. Well, we get there, and it's, me and Bo set up, and I glass the field, and I look, and I see more than 10 points. So I said, Bo, that's our deer. And Bo got it done. And I, daggummit, I didn't have a camera on. I filmed Tate's, but I wasn't able to film Bo's. But he made a great shot, and they scored him. It wasn't even the deer we were going after. It was another buck showed up in there.
What ended up scoring?
They scored him at, he grossed 149 and a half. That's a big old Georgia deer.
That is a big Georgia deer, but I always go gross. I don't do net. I don't believe in the deductions.
Yeah, yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, that's like me. I just add them up and walk around with my chest poked out.
Hey, well, let me ask you this, because I seen a picture of you. You had a bow in your hand, so I know you're into the archery thing as well. So what caliber are you starting your boys off with? Because, back in the day, man, my first buck, little Spike, out there in the shooting. Ozona, Texas, 22-250.
Yeah.
A little bit light, in my opinion, these days. But so the question is, what caliber for your boys?
So Bo's first deer, I had a little a 243. My first deer was I shot one with my dad's 243. So I had a single shot 243. And, man, I am blanking on. Anyway, so we got out. And about 50 yards, it was about 3 inches off, and we couldn't ever, because the barrel's so short, at 100, it was, and my son, he killed his first buck at about 100 yards. I don't know how he hit the deer. But so I went, and I got Bo shooting a, You may have heard of these rifles. They're really big in Texas. McWhirter. Have you heard of a McWhirter?
Yeah.
Well, the guys that build them, they build them in Doran, Georgia. Doran. Anyway, it's spelled Doerun. So it's kind of funny, but they build them down there. And the caliber that I've got Bo is shooting a 6.5 by 47 Lapua, which is a cool, I mean, it's a cool load. And then I've got Tate. I had some folks give me a Tika, 260, and it had a wood stock, and Tate is a small bow. Right. My 9-year-old is big. He's a big kid. So Tate, I sawed about a quarter of the stock off, and I kind of customized it. So Tate's been shooting that 260, and he does good with it.
Man, but the thing about it is, I was thinking, you know, the 6.5 started becoming a hot round and sexy. You know, back in the day when the 7 mag was sexy or whatever, it's kind of faded out. Well, 30-06 and 270, still number one and two deer guns, but you just never hear about them anymore. But my deal with the 6.5 was, man, I like the custom load stuff, but – you know, I'll get maybe a box for a certain gun, but then after that, man, it's stuff I got to find off the shelf. Yeah. So, you know, it's for me, at my place in South Texas before I sold it, because, you know, it's more management hunting there.
We're
trying to grow big deer. 2,000 acres and a high fence.
But you'll run around and shoot 5 deer in an afternoon trying
to... Yeah, get my numbers. But, man, I'm shooting a 308. I just got off a mule
deer. To drop them.
Oh, yeah. Man, yeah. Dude, I built an AR-10 just as a hog gun. And, man, that thing was performing so well when a cold deer would show up. Now I'm just big on that bolt action 308, but I just got back from Nevada on a mule deer hunt 80 miles out of Winnemucca, my first mule deer hunt. And, man, I took my 7 mag. You know, I shot 3 inches high at 100. I figured I'm going to be shooting about 300 yards. Man, we get out there, and it's a little bit different. I want to ask you about your hunting experience. I know we want to talk about the album.
Right,
we'll get that covered. But, God dang, dude, you know, hunting in South Texas, you can hunt over bait in South Texas. When you're in the brush country, you kind of got to, because if you don't, you probably ain't going to see a whole lot of stuff.
Right.
So going out there to Nevada, you know, 90% of Nevada is public land. It's been really interesting. We took our buggies out there. We're on top of a mountain, and my brother-in-law, he knows the whole state of Nevada like the back of his hand. They sit down in their camp chairs. They got their spotting scopes on tripods, and they're both sitting there glassing. And I just got a pair of 10 power binoculars, like a rangefinder's. Yeah, it's good glass, but it's 10 power. So I'm sitting there thinking, I say, hey, man, how's this going down? Man, you just covered the stuff out to 1,000 yards. We're looking 3 to 5 miles. And I'm thinking, all right, so we're going to see one in 3 to 5 miles, and then what's the approach? Because, dude, out there, I want to ask you about hunting in Piney Woods. Yeah, because everything looks the same to me out there. If I wasn't hunting with my brother-in-law, like I said, he knows that place like the back of his hand. Dude, I'd be turning around, and if I was going to take a deer, I'd end up so damn lost. I wouldn't know what to do. So we rounded a corner riding a buggy, and all of a sudden there was, because the rut was on, there was a group of does, about 10 does. There's a buck in there, and as soon as I ranged that deer, it was at 184 yards. My brother-in-law said, you better shoot that deer. I dropped him. The deer scored 180.
Oh, great.
Good first mule deer.
Anyway,
the hunting experience was so much different than hunting over corn. How are you guys hunting over in Kansas? Because Kansas got some badass whitetail deer. And Georgia, you can't hunt over corn either.
Yeah, you can. They passed it a couple years ago.
Okay, Tennessee. Back when I lived there, you couldn't.
Yeah, Tennessee, you can't. And Georgia, you can now. And, you know, what's interesting, I mean, and you can, you know, when you look at a state like Georgia, and Georgia's real similar to Texas, I mean, all those piney woods, I mean, some of those deer, and a lot of deer in Georgia are really, really nocturnal. I mean, you're only, you know, 90% of your pictures of a big deer in Georgia, they're just going to be nighttime pictures. So, you know, the corn thing in Georgia has been able to, you know, it's been able to put Georgia a little bit more on the map. You see a lot bigger deer coming out of the state of Georgia. And but Kansas, you know, when we're out there with Roche, we hunt Missouri and Kansas. And I don't think you can't bait in Missouri, but I think you can bait in Kansas, right?
Man, I don't know. I just know both states have damn good deer.
Well, when we go to Roche's, I don't think – I had never hunted over bait, you know – I can't remember the rules on that, but anyway, when we're in Kansas, man, we've had some, you know, Roachy kills. Adam LaRoche. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to meet Adam. I mean,
heard the name.
Adam's got 2,000 acres in Kansas. He's right on the Kansas-Missouri line. So when we go to Adam's, we can get a Missouri tag and a Kansas tag. And if we tag out in Kansas, we drive 5 minutes over the line and we hunt in Missouri. So it's a pretty cool dynamic. But at the end of the day, you know, Adam's loaded up with deer. But, you know, heck, you sit there and it's just about, when you got a bow in your hand, it's about, it doesn't matter if you're in the most target-rich environment. All the right scenarios have got to come together. I've killed, I think through my 8 years going to Kansas, I probably killed 3 bucks. I hadn't killed an all-out trophy. I killed a big old cull six. I killed a, you know, half the time I'm killing a cull buck for Adam or something. And
half time I just soon shoot them cull bucks.
I mean,
big trophy's great, but those culls like a big six.
Oh yeah,
big eight. It's nice.
You know, I tell you, it was fun. My Tennessee farm is really, really neat. We got tons of deer, you know, but they're not ginormous bucks or whatever. But man, I went the other day. I killed an elk with my bow in September, and I hadn't drawn my bow back since September. And I told my farm manager, I said, "Hey, come sit in the blind with me." And I said, "If a doe walks out, I just want to shoot something with my bow." Sure, perfect scenario. Doe comes up about 30 yards, and I made a good shot. And heck, man, I had more fun doing that than chasing, you know, a bit. So it's all about. And now with my Tennessee farm, it's like, I don't want to go shoot some 140, 150 inch buck when I can take my boys, put them on
right.
them. So, you know, when we go to Tennessee, it's really about, you know, just having fun and enjoying being out in the woods.
Well, how do you get out in the woods to begin with? Because, I mean, god dang, hooked on it, fishing, loving every day. I mean, you like to write and sing about many of the things that you're passionate about.
Right, right.
Great outdoors. And you're riding four-wheelers and UTVs and stuff like that, but you grew up in Leesburg, right?
Right, yeah.
Man, you know, I remember I was born in Austin, Texas. My parents got a divorce. We were city slickers. Moved down to Victoria between Houston and Corpus, and my stepdad was an avid hunter.
Yeah.
He sold insurance. He played guitar in a country and western dance band on weekends, and he sang a little bit. He played lead guitar. And, man, I remember, because he was such an outdoorsman, you know, he took on these three kids, my older brother, me, and Kevin. And there we are, walking in the woods behind him,
yeah,
stepping
awesome.
On every stick he could step on.
Yeah.
And he's always telling us to be quiet. I'll keep his family friendly.
Yeah.
But that's what got me in the woods. You growing up in Leesburg, basically, you grew up on a farm. How did you get involved in hunting?
Well, Leesburg is a little bitty town.
I know. I researched it because I got a story for you. 70 miles away in Ryan, Georgia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How'd you get started?
So my dad, I mean, we were just – my dad was a big outdoorsman. My dad – his main passion probably was dove hunting. When dove season down there, all those peanuts down there. I mean, you know, back when I was a kid, we would have just amazing dove shoots down there, you know, limited out every day. And, you know, there I am, you know, my brother, he's on the stand over shooting a Sweet 16, and there I am with my dad. You know, and I was my dad's bird dog, and I was 6, 7 years old running out getting my dad's birds. And then, you know, we would deer hunt a good bit. I mean, my dad wasn't a deer hunter like he was in the woods every day, but my brother deer hunted every day of the season.
Yeah.
He worked for UPS, and his UPS job would let him have afternoons off, and then he would leave UPS and work on a big plantation. And he worked on that plantation down there to get the opportunity to guide some hunts. And he'd pick him out a good South Georgia deer every year, and he'd kill him a good deer every year. But, and then we grew up. I mean, my dad though, my dad would bird hunt a lot. And, you know, about when the weather started, he wouldn't go out there when it was too hot, when it started cooling off in Georgia. You know, we'd all load up, and we never had – he worked in agriculture, and we never had our own property, so he always had to get permission from farmers and farmers that he knew through his ag business. And so And every year we kind of had permission to hunt a different spot. So we'd have to go get our deer stands down from one property, move them over to another, and never did like any high end management. We just went. Yeah. And it's totally different now.
I mean, it has changed.
It's changed because a lot of these, you know, with my farms, I mean, man, we got the deer documented. We're putting protein out. And
I got my name.
Yeah, yeah.
Because once you see a deer and you see those horns, I mean, that's those horns. You know that deer. And, you know, hey, man, that deer ain't old enough. We're gonna carry that deer
another year.
But back in the day when I'd been hunting all my life and I got in the wrestling business, I got on the road. And you know all about being on the road. It takes away all your time. And I always wanted to bow hunt. But, hell, I didn't bow hunt just because I figured my chances of getting a deer were a lot better being, you know, with a rifle than a bow.
Right.
Just for range.
So you wanted to go make it happen quick.
And I get out to Atlanta, and I move there from Texas, and I don't know anybody, so I'm not out in the woods. I stopped deer hunting, riding down the road one day with a guy named Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff. And he goes, boy, he goes, you like hunting? I said, yeah, man. I said, I like hunting, but I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, I'm just going to Texas, and I'm living in Atlanta now. And he goes, man, I'm on a deer lease. Why don't you get on it with me? And he goes, you got a deer gun? I said, well, my rifle's back in Texas. He goes, we'll build you a 7 mag, the one I shot that mule deer with. So anyway, back in 92. And so the deer lease, turns out, is down there in Ryan, Georgia.
Yeah.
70 miles.
As
a crow flies or as a highway goes.
Right.
You grew up.
Yeah.
And I remember it being kind of like peanuts, but it seemed like there was also some watermelons over there because those landowners would get permits. And I was thinking to myself, how are these deer eating these watermelons? Well, I didn't know back time. They just stomp them with the hooves.
Yeah, they get in there and paw them up.
Yeah.
But for a while, you can get permits.
Because I'm used to seeing a watermelon on the table with some salt and pepper shakers right there by. So it was a different ball game. But God dang, it was kind of some swampy country. We was on 2,000 acres. We was the only ones out there. Some guys from Jupiter, Florida that were never out there. And Ravishing Rick Rude came out there and joined the lease with us. I don't know if you ever watched any wrestling.
Oh, I did. That's
but
awesome.
But God dang, I don't think the whole time, we was out there for about 3 years.
And y'all didn't.
And we, I don't think nobody
drank
ever
more whiskey and killed than.
Well, it was a lot of chaos going on out there. A couple of hogs did meet their demise.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the extent of it. But I was like, God dang, man, while I was over tramps in that woods, you probably would have been, give or take, you know, a senior in high school.
Yeah. Well, in 92, I'd have been a sophomore, junior.
Yeah.
We would one of my best friends, man, we'd get up, you know, when the hunting got good. Now my dad, like I said, I met some buddies and I deer hunted a little more than my dad. And
but like bird guys are kind of more bird guys, and a lot of them don't care about them deer. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, my dad, even, you know, my dad will kill him one deer a year, but he's not going to get out there and try to, you know, hunt him a big buck every year. So me and my best friend, we'd get in the truck and we'd go hunt before school, you know, we'd roll into high school with our camo on and half asleep and certainly not ready to learn anything. But, and then, you know, when I went off to college, you know, you get off to college and you kind of get away. You don't know anybody where you're going to college. And then when I went to Nashville, man, that was like the dark ages of my outdoor career. You know, growing up small town, I mean, I could go fish where I want to. I had 5 or 6 ponds I could go to, rivers, lakes, and creeks to fish. But you go to Nashville, and I didn't know anybody. And so the first 4 or 5 years, you know, I'd get home and dove hunt once a year and deer hunt a little bit. But then I got in with obviously Willie Robertson and all the guys in Buck Commander. And at the time, Chipper Jones was in there. And my first South Texas hunt was at Chipper's place down at the Double Dime.
Dude, that's about 40 miles as a crow flies from my old place.
Yeah. And, man, when I went down there, it just changed the whole game for me.
The lights go off, that South Texas brush country with those big bucks. Was that what you're talking about?
Man, it was the most. I don't think when I'd go down there, I wouldn't sleep for 5 days. And, you know, everybody'd come in after the morning hunt and go take a nap. Well, I'd get the farm, the ranch guy, and we'd go rattle and we'd go just ride around and shoot some does and try to, you know, do some management. So, man, Chipper was really nice to me to let me go in and I kid. So funniest story, You know, I roll in off the road. Chipper used to, you know, the big time in, like, right now is when to be in South Texas.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can't believe thanks for letting me pull you away from it. But Chipper, you know, that December 15th, well, right when my career was getting going, I flew from Buffalo, New York, straight into San Antonio and went. And my first morning, I shot a management buck, but at the time, I mean, it was 145, 148 inch management buck. I'd never seen a deer that big on the hoof, and I shoot him, and man, I'm freaking out, and we got it on video or whatever. So, you know, a bunch of the buck commander guys, they were all bow hunting. So, I walked out there and I said, I'd never bow hunted that much. And I said, hey, guys, I've already got one down with a rifle. And I said, let me try bow hunting. So, man, I got out there that afternoon and did a crash course and go get in the stand. And a management 10-pointer walks 15 yards in front of me, and I thread him. I still ain't made it that good of a shot on an animal. And, man, I was hooked on bow hunting. And ever since then, you know, I've really worked hard and tried to become a better bow hunting, but that got me hooked.
Two questions for you. You're talking about your dad didn't want to get out there in the heat when that cool front to set in. Man, out there in South Texas, like right now, man, if I still have my place, dude, you're sitting in a box and it's probably 90 down there right now. They had a cold streak just blew through and it snowed down there, actually.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Man, everything's kind of warmed up, man. So, man, what you're seeing me wear right here, normally I got a dry fit sleeveless shirt on, the same shorts, tennis shoes. I don't worry about no snake boots because it's hotter than hell inside those deer stands. And I'm begging a cold front to come in. So my question is, as I'm sitting there sweating my ass off, what lengths will you go to get out there in the wild and whether it's elk or whatever? I had my brother, he was up in Colorado. They was on the side of a mountain. The sun was going down. They spotted an elk. Him and the guide went down to try to get a shot at it. The storm blew in. They ended up sleeping on the damn side of the mountain. His wife was up there with the horses. Everybody turned out to be okay. They rejoined each other in the morning, but they both had frostbite and stuff like that and didn't lose any fingers or nothing. But I told my brother, I said, Scott, I said, man, that's cool that you're into all them adventures and stuff like that. But I said, man, after beating my ass up for 15 years, I'm going to Cadillac it. So, Luke, I'm asking you, now from going your Leesburg days to now your Luke Bryan superstar country music singing days, will you get out there and rough it?
Yeah, man. What's funny is when I get the chance to go hunting, I don't miss a hunt. You know, some of my buddies, I'm not going to throw them under the bus, but they'll get into brown stuff, the liquor a little too much, and they'll sleep in the morning. But typically, man, I get up and go because I geek out about it, and especially when we do our elk hunt. There's nothing more rewarding than striking out in the morning and start chasing bugling elk. And next thing you know, you look at your GPS tracker and you done put 12 miles in and, you know, you done drawn back on two smaller bulls that you didn't shoot. And the next thing you know, you shoot one and then you got to pack that thing out. So I'll get out there and, you know, go and that, because it's liberating. It's nothing's more rewarding than going out there and chasing elk and having to pack them out. But yeah, I'll get out there, and I haven't done like a big old high altitude sheep hunt or anything. Right. But like I said, I'm so daggum busy with the career. So, it, you know, when that stuff slows down, my wife and I have talked about this. I'm like, you know, I try to stay in shape just so, you know, one day when heck, I hope I can look half like you when I'm 50, but it's so you can go do these cool, these hard, strenuous hunts. You know, you don't want to be, you know, I want to be able to do that up into my 60s, especially when I was able to take my nephew, Teal, who lives with me. He just turned 16, but he came, when we get done here, I'll show you some video footage, but Teal killed his first elk. And so the first day of my elk hunt, I videoed and kind of guided him and helped him. So trying to stay on the heels of a 15-year-old running up and down a mountain, you got to be in shape. And so, yeah, when I'm in deer camp, man, I try to hunt. You know, I don't miss many hunts. I don't sleep in. And I've always got my boys there with me. And, man, I'm so proud because my youngins, I mean – my six, he's seven now, but last year, my 6-year-old sat with me 13 times before he got and he did, you know, I had it figured out. I'd have some games on my phone, some M&Ms in my pocket. But he sat there with me for 12 sits, and then he finally got his first buck. And like I said, he's 7 now. And
was he playing the video games, or was he everything?
You know, you can tell when you're losing them a little bit. You let him play for 5-10 minutes, and I'll keep scouting. But you want to keep it fun, too. I don't want to take them so much that I burn them out. It's like sports.
Yeah.
You don't want them to be burned out at an early age with hunting or fishing.
But, man, talk to me about chasing them elk, because I was talking with Mike before you rolled in the room. And he's wearing some cologne over there. And I said, man, you pass the test. Because, you know, a lot of times you just get up on somebody and they walk by in the airplane and it wafts, just hits you like, oh, man. So as we shook hands a while ago, I know you're sporting a little cologne. That's part two of my question, scent control out there. Because, man, them elk are just super smart. Yeah. It's all about that nose.
Yeah.
So talk to me about scent control, because you're using the bow, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to get close.
Well, you know what's
– you got all the layers on? I've been watching. I watched your Bobby Bones interview. I know you ain't wearing no deodorant. Talk to me, brother.
Oh, you know, you know, when you first start elk hunting, you know, their ability to smell you is unlike – And work in the wind. I mean, I'm real blessed to have the guy that I used for years. I mean, man, he will go through 2 bottles of scent of scent stuff.
Yeah.
He'll take 10 steps and check it, because you know those thermals on the mountain. You know the wind will be hitting you in the face, but you don't know where the thermals are taking you. And there's been many times that me and my guide, man, we'll about get into it on the mountain. Because the elk will be right there. And I'm like, Dole, let's go. And he's like, no, we're not going to go down there. I mean, when it comes to elk, I mean, I truly think you probably can't get scent free with an elk. I think they're going to probably smell you. I mean, if the wind shifts on you and next thing you know, you see 30 of them trucking up the mountain. And we dealt with a lot of that this year, but then – it's funny, you'll chase an elk, and it'll all go right, and then the wind shifts. And then we were just sitting there waiting on some elk to come in, and the elk I shot just happened to be walking through, and it was the perfect scenario. We didn't even call to him. But yeah, I mean, it's something. I mean, through the years, I've learned to just really work the wind. I never will forget. I mean, last year I was hunting with Lee and Tiffany.
Yep.
Lukoski at their place. And, man, we were hunting in a redneck blind, and we had all the windows shut. We had 2 Ozonics running in there.
Cadillac style, brother.
Yeah, we still had deer winding us that were in our wind. And we still lucked up and got it done. But, I mean, I love the Ozonics program, though. I mean, I've seen that work to a T. But – you know, half the time, too, I'm not one of these guys that I pack all my clothes and in the airtight stuff and spray it. You know, I'll spray it down with some scent eliminator and stuff like that. But I don't get too geeked out about being all scent-free out there.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to TrueCar and come back with Luke Bryan. Now, there's something about TrueCar that a lot of people don't know, that TrueCar can also help you find a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, TrueCar gets you upfront pricing information that empowers, letting you see what other people pay for the car you want so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing to make the process quick and easy. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. And don't forget the car insurance for that vehicle. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right, guys. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
I'm Wade Keller, host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, exclusively here at Podcast One, 4 days a week. Tuesday mornings, we cover Monday Night Raw from the night before. Wednesday mornings, we cover SmackDown from the night before. Thursdays is our flagship, where we talk about the whole pro wrestling industry and all the latest news. And Fridays features my weekly interview. Recent interviews have included Sean Waltman, X-Pac, talking about the John Cena legacy, what makes AJ Styles so great from a wrestler's perspective, and how Vince McMahon has changed over the years. Other interviews recently have included Podcast One's very own Jim Ross, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, ex-WWE creative team members, and more. Check out the show 4 days a week. Just search Wade Keller on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Podcast.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Coming up as a youngster in Leesburg, dude, I think there was a story. I was watching a video of you. I think it was your mother talking, and she used to rock you when you was a baby.
Yeah.
Amazing Grace, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe you think that's where your musical instincts come from, or just because I was just reading about your prolific songwriting. I mean, you said you'd write 120 songs a year sometimes, and you're not really doing that anymore, but you'd hook up with your writing buddies.
Right, back in the early days.
Songs back in the day. When did you first, you know, kind of learn, like, hey, man, I really, really like this. I'm kind of good at it, or just kind of have an affinity towards it?
Well, with me, I think every little process, I think the most important thing for me as far as being a songwriter and an artist, I mean, my parents, their radios never turned off a country radio. And so, I mean, from the time I was could remember and recollect music, I mean, country music was on the radio, and it wasn't anything else. I mean, and it kind of hurt me in a lot of aspects because, man, I didn't get any my parents didn't listen to Beatles.
Right.
They didn't listen. Now, they listened to, I mean, the only rock and roll was Elvis.
Yeah.
And so I missed out on, like, the Beatles and a lot of these iconic rock acts, and people still asked me to this day, but man, I knew country radio from every artist from 1980 till present day. And so I think that early on got me really to where it was just second nature to kind of say what you felt like you needed to say in a country song. But then when you look at singing in church, you know, writing some songs for my youth group in church, we do Wednesday night youth stuff at my church. And I'd, you know, 16 years old, I'd be playing the guitar and doing these worship songs and stuff like that, these two-chord, three-chord worship songs. And then I'd write kind of a spiritual song and singing in church. And, man, once I started doing that and seeing that, man, I'm writing these things and people are listening to them and it's affecting them. And then, you know, I had some guys in town that I would write with on – and then I had a little band, and you know, we just never really overthought it, but we were just doing it because it was fun and we loved it. And next thing you know, I'm playing a birthday party here, I'm playing a little wedding reception here, and next thing you know, the college years come along, and
those years got delayed, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
You had a bad accident.
Yeah, with the loss of my brother.
Do you think staying at home and then, because you weren't going to go to college originally, you were going to just go out to Nashville.
Yeah, I had done a year at a junior college.
Copy.
And then, I just said that, heck with it. I'm, you know, I had my parents' blessing. And, you know, their approach was, you know, dadgum, you're 19 years old, go try it. If you don't like it, you're 21 years old. You know, I think when you're 19, you think you're old or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I had Nashville, I had an apartment picked out and everything. And when my brother passed away in a car accident, it just shifted my life down another path. And then I finished, you know, I finished college and went and, good man, I mean, I had, like, I couldn't imagine, like, my life without the college experience. I had so much fun, but I think I might have been a little immature for Nashville at 19 years old.
I was going to ask you, because you were probably playing local gigs, you know, in college, right?
Yeah, I played, you know, acoustic sets in college bars, and, you know, man, I was learning how to play you know, I was learning how to play country music in college bars and trying to keep college kids' attention and make sure they had a good time. So I was learning how to really, you know, I'd learned that, well, this song didn't work on a college right. crowd, but, you know, I could play a Merle Haggard song, but then I could play, you know, a dadgum, you know, the biggest rap song. And then I could, I learned how to kind of, you right. know, sew the, you know, so I'd play Lionel Richie songs at, you know, at the right time and the whole college crowd would be partying. And so I learned how to really hopefully hold a crowd and entertain in a lot of those college scenarios. Cause if you're rolling into a college bar, I mean, you know, they can listen to every form of music. A college kid, they don't have any, you know, if they grew up under their parents' thumb and the parents only let them listen to, when it got to college, they'd listen to whatever. Right. So you had to work harder to keep their attention.
But keeping their attention then and keeping their attention now. Talk about the evolution of your music, because I know that you like to stick to some of what, you know, is
got
bread
me
and
here,
butter,
yeah, yeah.
but also to be able to get out there a little bit. Now, here's my Zumba story. A couple years ago, I was just jamming this album. I had tailgates and
tan lines
on. I drove up to Reno, Nevada. 475 miles, pick up some deer meat. I listened to that album the whole time on the way up there. And so I was hanging out with my brother-in-law and on the way back, and we'd kind of gotten that dark stuff you was talking about, brown water. I was kind of feeling the effects when I was driving back home. And I said, dude, you've got to put in what makes you country. We go over and talk to Luke. Man, I had my ear pods in again, and man, that damn guitar hit me. It was like a lightning bolt hit my brain. I was like, man, that's a rocking ass country song. I dig it. It's a great song. I love the whole album. Talk to me about trying to remain Luke Bryan, but also, man, dude, for the last couple of years, you're the hottest thing going. You know, tell me about maintaining that ride.
You know, it's...
I know you don't like to overthink things, but you've got to put a lot of thought into this, brother.
No, you always got to think about it. You always have to... First of all, I have a really awesome inner circle of songwriter buddies, you know, people, you know, and I'm one of these guys, man, I really enjoy getting my label and hearing their opinions. I mean, some people don't want anybody's opinions about their music. I love to get feedback from my inner circle, from my house to heck, my manager's office, the people in the room, they'll tell you, I'm like, hey, what'd you think about that one? Yeah. And then my band, you know, my band, yeah. my road band, and my nieces and my nephew. And so I get all these opinions of songs, but then, man, I watch what my fans are doing. I mean, it's, you know, I will forever, try to think about what they're wanting to hear. And, am I going to bat 1,000? Am I going to knock it out of the park every time? No, but, you know, I hope my fans know that if I get a little out there, if I do something a little crazy and people are like, oh my God, where's he going? But then I can always rein it back in. Yeah. I can tell when the fans, I mean, you were so in tune with what your fan, when you did an antic on stage and you got a reaction from the fans, you knew that was the right thing to do.
Man, I always figured you got to go out on a limb. I can always come back.
Yeah.
If that limb breaks, I just get up and start going again. But you got to push the envelope, because that reminds me of off that same tailgates of tan lines, Country Girl.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at the house. I'd already heard the song. And then my wife goes to Zumba 5 days a week. And all of a sudden she goes, we did a Zumba song to Luke Bryan today. And I'm like, BS. I said, what was it? She goes, Country Girl, Shake It For Me. I was like, okay, I get it. But so anyway, it's a great song. I love that song, but I would have never thought in a million years that my wife, who's a metalhead, would come home from a Zumba class yeah. saying, hey, I did a Zumba song to Luke Bryan today.
Well,
what do you think when you decided to take that one on?
Man, I never thought anything but it was going to be ginormous. From the day we wrote it was the only time I was scared of it. Me and Dallas Davidson, and I was like, are you sure, Dallas, we can go there? He's like, hell yes. And it
awesome.
Was it the simple fact of why I wrote Country Girl Shake It For Me was, you know, it was early in my career. I was playing every country music honky-tonk in the United States because at that time I could sell 400 tickets. You know, I couldn't sell 1,000 seats. Well, maybe in a couple, but so, man, I would go to these bars, these truck stop bars. I'd go to Billy Bob's in Texas and Fort Worth. In time I got my butt off the stage, hip-hop and dance and the dance floor filled up. And I said, well, I've got to try to write a little something that makes people want to dance like these hip-hop songs do that are – and the thing about country music is – you're pretty. You can't use all of the language that they use, and you can't.
Right.
Your parameters are a little. But man, when we did Country Girl Shake It for me, I never looked at it like. I mean, some people look. You know, they want to say, "Well, oh gosh, you're objectifying women, and you're trying to, you know, look at them as objects." And I just thought of it truly as, man, these girls are going to hear this and just have a damn blast.
Right.
From my end, you know, I didn't think about what critics were going to say. I didn't think about, was it going to set my career in. I felt that it when people heard it, from college kids to everybody, they were just going to hear it and want to dance and party. And I mean, when I turned it into my record label, they didn't know. I mean, they were just like,
which direction is Luke going?
Yeah, well, they were like, oh, my God, what the, you know, what do we do with this? And I said, put it out, let's go, put it out. And you know, they went with me, and you know, the next single was I Don't Want This Night to End. And it wasn't my pick, but I went with what my label
right.
decided. And heck, man, it may have been bigger than Country Girl Shake It for me. And then we went Drunk on You, and at that point, we were off to the races. I had always, I'd always felt, man, if you could put three or four ginormous songs
right.
back to back, then that puts you kind of to the mountaintop.
Watching the, God dang, it was Drunk on You.
Yeah,
I was watching the video the other day. I've been watching a bunch of them. I think I remember a video or some pictures of you. Were you in a drama class in high school?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, you know.
All right, well, talk to me about that. Was there any sports or was you drama? I mean, was you academic?
Talk to me about my sport.
I got 10 minutes left.
No, we'll pack it in there. But my sports thing was, man, from the time I was in kindergarten to the time I was in eighth grade, I was a pretty good athlete. I mean, I was a good baseball player, and I played football every year. And I was an all-star football player.
What position?
Well, I'd play, you know, when I was little, I'd play like nose guard. And you know, as I got a little older, I would play like tight end or something. But, man, I got to where all of my buddies, I was the youngest kid in my grade. I had a mid-July birthday, and the cutoff was August. So, man, I looked around, and I was a foot and a half shorter than everybody. I was a wormy, you know, and I was 5'7" in the 10th grade. And at the time, you know, and I wasn't a gym rat, you know. Yeah. I wasn't working out enough to compensate. And, man, I was looking at these, you know, we had – it's ironic. We had the worst football program in the state, but the best baseball program. And I, you know, if there was a team of 12 boys, I was probably the 12th best player, probably 11th. But my dad was 6'3", so them coaches were saying, at some point, this boy is fixing to grow, you know, 7 inches, and he's going to have an arm on him. And they kept talking to me. And I looked, and I never will forget, there was one boy that was a senior when I was 10th grade. He hit 14 homers, and he got a scholarship to, like, a junior college. And I said, hold up, this ain't for me. Because I could barely get it out of the infield. And so that's when music started happening a lot. Mm-hmm. And I went to my coach, and I said, man, I just watched so-and-so crank 14 homers last year, and he got a junior college scholarship. It's like, man, it ain't for me. And the next year, I went from 5'7 to 6'2, and I was 185 pounds when I graduated high school. But so my 12th grade year, man, I did the worst. I mean, I took two PEs, keyboarding, Spanish, art, and then I needed one last sixth. I had to do English because you had to do four years of English. But then I did a drama class.
Right.
And, you know, the drama teacher was a guy named Robbie Davis, and still to this day was one of the more influential, you know, teachers and figures in my life. And, man, when I, you know, if I had anything going for me, I had a big, big, loud theater voice. So, man, when I started singing, you know, I'd walk around and go sing, and I wasn't shy to sing. I mean, I was in my little band, and when he heard my voice, man, it would make him. Now, I was terrible at acting. I was a terrible actor.
My question is, watching you do all these videos, I mean, it looks like you're having a lot of fun. And I saw the drama class. I'm saying, okay, man, this cat, his mother's humming with him when he's a baby. He starts writing songs. He's in a drama class. I mean, you're just born to be in the entertainment business. Turns out you got a hell of a voice. You put your band together. So do you enjoy the video making process? Because some of that stuff, it all looks, it's glitz and glamour. It's fun. It's shiny. But when you're in there doing the grind, what the grind is like doing the promotion for this record.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy that?
Man,
as long as... You got any aspirations to act?
I don't know. I mean, I've got aspirations to always be having fun and entertainment. You know, my thing is I never want to pack my schedule full of stuff to where, you know, I wake up and I've lost touch with the music, with my core, what got me here. You know, dance with the one that brought you.
Right.
But that, you know, I took the American Idol thing because, man, I thought I would have fun, and I'm having a blast, and it's still music oriented. I'm getting inspired by that musically.
Yeah.
Now, if the right acting role came along, and you know, as long as, you know, I tell you this, I ain't never going to be doing any acting where I'm making out with another woman and rolling around because that ain't happening around the Bryan household. My wife's going to shut that down quick. But which, I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing roles like that anyway. But, man, if the right role came along and it doesn't pull me away from my family, I'd always entertain that stuff.
How you draw the line right now between all the Idol and the things you just mentioned, your tour, and you're pushing this record? When is too busy, too busy?
Well, too busy is too busy when, I mean, the back half of this year, I was too busy, but I set myself up for it. Now, going forward, too busy is when I'm running around. My voice is tired. You know, I'm not enjoying being on stage. You know, I can't, when I come home, I'm so tired. I can't play with my youngins and be a husband and a dad. And I think too much is when, you know, you're judging everything at home, and I can tell my wife is over it.
Yeah.
And then I need to dial it back. But, you know, but she also gets me too. She, you know, we laugh about retirement because I'm like, oh, baby, I'm going to retire. She's like, you ain't going to ever retire. No. But, I mean, the main thing is, man, finding that happy balance. Man, I want to be the one that wants, like, I want to be the one where I'm like a thoroughbred wanting to run to the stage because I'm excited about a show. As long as I'm doing that, you know, that's my thing. That means I'm fresh out there. I'm giving the fans what they pay their money for. And then when I get home, I hope, you know, and when I can take my boys out on the road, we can go have fun. And so it's a delicate balance, but trying to not overdo it and also smell the roses every now and then.
You got
too.
To, man. I mean, you got to make hay while the sun's shining.
Right.
You know, you're still a youngster. You still got a lot of things you want to do. God dang, I was at a George Strait concert over at AT&T Stadium when he had 100 and some odd thousand people there. Man, my doctor is his doctor, so we had the best seats in the house, and that stage was rotating, and it was the coolest thing, because as you know, he's a big influence on you.
Right.
God dang, George is George, and everybody there, man, had a smile on their face. Yeah. They were laughing, they were dancing and singing. It was one of the best times I've ever had in my life, and he's kind of starting to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, but it's hard for him. How do you walk away from making fans smile, you know? And
that's just the
it's
thing.
Like I see George, and, you know, I know he's doing some shows in Vegas, and it's like, you know what? I think he said he's going to retire, and then you sit around the house, and then you're like, I mean, it is so addictive to be on stage. And man, like I said, the neatest part is to take a song from your songwriting room in your house to write that song. And then a few short months later, you got 20,000 people singing it to you. And man, that's hard. That's hard to walk away from. And it's what fuels you.
Hey, before I wrap up here, I was listening to one of your interviews. When someone holds up a poster out in the crowd, if you read the poster, you'll forget the lyric to your song.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have the mental capability to read and sing at the same time. But you got to laugh it off.
What's your pre-concert ritual? I mean, you go through the one time I was at Ozfest San Antonio, I was hanging out with Zach Wild, his guitar player.
Yeah, yeah.
Ozzy bangs in. There's a room the size of that closet over there. Ozzy doesn't even know I'm in a room. I'm behind him, and he starts humming a few beats with Zach, and Zach's ripping on the guitar. And anyway, they go out there, and he's got the teleprompter, and they put on a concert, and, you know, Ozzy's in Ozzy land.
Yeah.
What's the process for you? I know I got to wrap up and go home, but what do you do to get ready for a show?
Man, my thing is I do a VIP meet and greet. I play a couple songs. At about 7:30, I go to my meet and greet at about 8:00, do, you know, average about 60, 70 fans a night. And then I've got about 30 minutes, and typically I'll go into my band's dressing room. I'll make me one vodka and grapefruit drink, sit there, visit with the band. It's, you know, because my band and I, we're not on a bus anymore, which I miss because, man, we have so much fun cutting up. But so I'll kind of spend 30 minutes, you know, cutting up with the band. We'll talk some show notes. And then I'll have me a vodka grapefruit. About, you know, 10 after 9, we go to backstage. We do a toast. I'll have me a little half tequila shot. And then there we go. I'm out on the stage. And, you know, that's been a good little program that works. And, man, you know, we have fun and try to go out there and every night give the fans. Man, it's hard to pony up $50 for a concert. And not only are you ponying up 50, you're ponying up, you know, you got three or four of your kids and your wife with you. So it's a $250 thing. So, man, I take pride in trying to do the best I can every night.
Dude, that's the same thing with me, man. If someone's going to pay their money, I wanted to, you know, bust my ass to give them a good show. And so that was the same thing. My last question, I'm a time fanatic. I love watches. the wristwatch on your left arm, what is that?
It is a Patek Philippe.
That means you have made it, young man. Hey, man.
Hey, it's my end of year gift to myself.
What so. Makes you country? I appreciate talking to you.
Hey,
good meeting you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
The music. Keep
anytime,
it up.
Anytime we can do this. This is enjoyable.
Safe
thank
travels.
You.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. Now, if you're hearing my voice, it means you like podcasting. And if you like podcasting, well, then you're going to love my show. Lots of funny segments, good bits, great guests, and, of course, moi. That's Mexican for me. So check it out at Podcast One, iTunes, or wherever you listen to fine podcasts. The Adam Carolla Show. Throw it on your phone. It's free.
All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. It's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Luke Bryan. Give me an hour of your day. It was good meeting you and good talking to you. The new album is called Luke Bryan, What Makes You Country. Hey, man, that number one song right out of the gate is badass. You talk about some guitar licks on that thing. And Out of Nowhere Girl, kind of a funky song. I dig that one the most. And, man, I hooked on it. There's a bunch of good songs on this CD. It's full of good songs. If you're a Luke Bryan fan, you're going to love it. If you've never listened to Luke Bryan, I suggest you give him a try. I've been listening to his music for a long time, so I knew what to expect, and he delivered. He's a good cat. And I enjoyed meeting him and talking to him. To those four cats in that convertible Mustang, I'm sorry I could not direct you to Beverly Hills. Hopefully you find your way over there. Hey, man, Elias is coming up on the Tuesday show. Katie, bar the door. No ifs, ands, or buts. Elias, WWE Superstar, will be on next Tuesday's show. I appreciate talking to you, Elias. Sorry I had to bump you. Just trying to get this word on the street for Luke. Hey, I'm telling you, man,
Do not forget to set your DVRs for the Broken Skull Challenge. Tuesday, 10, 9 Central, only on CMT. It's the women coming out, and these are some badass women. Second place gets a second chance. Oh, this is an awesome episode. You will dig it the most. Hey, man, the best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. And you can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you ain't in Cali, check InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking for either the cold steel Broken Skull knife or the new Working Man knife, you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. You can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. And speaking of Podcast One, the new Podcast One app is now available for download at the App Store or Google Play. There ain't another podcast app like this one anywhere, and that's because the new Podcast One app is loaded with some cool features that let you do a lot more than just listen to your favorite shows. You can access behind-the-scenes photos, articles, and connect with other fans of the shows you like. And you can watch over 1,000 360 virtual reality videos. You can actually watch some of your favorite shows in virtual reality. It's like you're sitting right in the room with them. So get to the App Store or Google Play and download the new Podcast One app now. Until then, folks, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.